It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. We are up and running on both streams from headon.live and headonradionetwork.com, whiteRoseSociety.org, Twitcher, Stitter, Stitcher, Roku, seriously, TuneIn, Stitcher, Roku, all the various and sundry multifarious platforms by which you can get this broadcast. We're running on all of them, and that's a good thing. And it's also a little bit of a surprise because things have been a little dicey around here today. We got a late winter, and this is, winter's only got about 8 days left in it. I got up this morning, and lo and behold, there was a foot of snow on the ground. And the power had blinked, and it blinked some more, and it may yet blink again. And if it does, well, I'll kind of disappear. But I'll try to come back, assuming the power does as well. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's 5 minutes after 6 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Ha ha! Yes, I remembered. And so, it's time to trot out that old aphorism that may be apocryphal but is nonetheless true, attributed to some indigenous person in the United States who said, "Only a white man would think you can cut the bottom off the blank off of a blanket and sew it to the top of the blanket, and somehow have more blanket. Welcome to daylight savings time." Yes. So we're at the beginning of a brand new week. It is the 12th day of March 2018. And my beloved Mountaineers are a 5 seed in the big dance. They will face Murray State. If they get past Murray State, and of course, being a Mountaineer fan, that means that anything can go wrong at any time. If they get past, but it was a cute little bit of seeding that the committee pulled out of it, the hat, because if they get past Murray State, they play the winner of Wichita State versus Marshall. Marshall, of course, being actually in the tournament. Surprise. That would set up an in-state rivalry, which would be a real big deal. And then Marshall's not going to get past whoever it is. No, Marshall's not going to get past Wichita State. But anyway, so that was interesting over the weekend. But if you want to see what it looks like around here about now, you can run on over to my Facebook page or my Instagram account. And I just posted a few photos. It was just too pretty to let it all melt away and not take notice of it. It's gorgeous, and it's not that particularly cold. It's a toasty 51 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Mansion Studios, and I've got the remainder of a bottle of gas going. Agnes is over looking after our eldest daughter, who is having some considerable health problems. And, so that means I'm taking care of the mansion here. And gosh, oh golly gee. Yeah, well, not even going to be a smartass about it. I miss Agnes. There's she makes this place go. And that's really all there is to say about it. But we got every bit of a foot of snow last night. It was something. And just as pretty, not powdery, and it's not blue-ass cold, just about right at freezing. The state of West Virginia actually managed to get the roads cleared. They may not have even gotten very messy, for that matter, because it was a snow that came down in fairly warm conditions. But it's gorgeous. And, hopefully it's the last of the year. So that's where that is. Of course, we try to keep the program on the air by raising a little bit of money every evening. And this evening, because we did manage to finish our fundraising goal and last week, and thanks to everybody who made that happen. Thank you to everybody who jumped in on Friday. Thanks for the challenges and the responses. We've just got a plain old boring garden variety $200 fundraising goal. Yay. Yay for that. And so if we can do that, 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 12, 50, 32 at 6 and a quarter, or of course 64 people at $3.13, and we'll roll up from that half penny up from 12 and a half cents, and we will put that... We'll put that in the oat fund for the horses that draw the sleigh over the deep and drifting snow. Here we go. Okie doke. Yes. And all kidding aside, if you'd like to be a subscriber, we love our subscribers, and Horn subscribers manage to knock down around about a week's worth of any month's fundraising, so that we can have fundraising free radio for the last week of the month. And thanks go out this evening to Christopher. Thank you, Christopher, there very kindly. Thank you very much to Angelica in Oregon. Thank you, Angelica. Thank you very kindly to Paul in California. And thanks very much to Gary up in New York. Hey, Gary. Thank you kindly. Thanks to Mark in Minnesota. Thank you very, very much indeed. Thanks to John, who became a brand new subscriber over the weekend. Thank you very kindly, John. Thanks very much. Go out to Mary Bell in Kansas. Thank you to Christopher in Oregon. And to Paul from Parts Unknown. Had a great note from Paul from Parts Unknown about education last week, if you recall. Thanks to Tony out in Chico. Thank you very much to Brendan in Oregon. Thanks to John in Maryland. And see, isn't this a much? This is ever so much more enjoyable than advertisements, isn't it? I should think so. Thank you very kindly to Don, who recently celebrated a birthday. Happy birthday, Don. Thank you. Thank you to Judy in New York. And thanks to J. Joshua there in Michigan. Thank you very much indeed. And I find it much more pleasant to thank the people who help keep the program on the air than, trying to entice you to sign up for a chat with your psychotherapist system that will let you stand in the middle of Midtown New York City traffic and chat your I'm beginning to think, given the fact that they haven't been able to get that woman out of time to quit tweeting in the middle of traffic in Times Square, for well over a year, I'm beginning to think Talkspace may not be so effective. That's just me. But, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I find it a lot more pleasant to simply thank the people who are partial sponsors of this program. Thanks, Glenn, in New York, for getting us up and running and started on this evening. That means we've only got $189 to go in fundraising, and that's a big damn deal, as the former Vice President of the United States might say. And just as a, you know, just as a sort of a reminder, what we're talking about when we talk about subscriptions is less than 50 cents per program. And if you sign up for a $10 subscription and set it and forget it, like the folks whose names I just mentioned did, then, well, it's easy. And you know, at $10 a month, what you're doing is you're letting a contribution of about 16 cents per hour of programming keep all of this going, keep all the plates spinning on all the sticks. You can do it over at PayPal, at headonradionetwork.com under the Contribute tab, or you can do it at Patreon, patreon.com/Bob Kincaid. The PayPal subscriptions come out on whatever day of the month you do it on. Patreon comes out on the first day of the month. And I have this vision. I've had it for years. We haven't quite gotten there. We've gotten a quarter of the way, basically, of being able to just open the program, do the program, and never say a word about fundraising. And that would be, well, that's a pretty fond dream of mine. So, you know, if you've got 16 cents for an hour, if you've got less than 50 cents a day, and you sign on for a subscription at a whopping $10 a month, if we ever get to the point where we got 400 of those people, there's no more of this. And how awesome would that be? Let's see, some notes coming in early on this morning, Monday. Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana, thinking about things that matter. Bob, since it's cold and you have a foot of snow, is it safe for me to assume no naked radio tonight and I can eat dinner during the show? Yes. Bon appetit, Jeff. There will be no naked radio this evening because, well, we're not going to talk about what I'd look like, because I'd like for you to enjoy your dinner and not have any troubling mental images whatsoever. Mm-hmm. True enough, Scott and Punky reminding me, a reminder on this wintry day, never make snow angels in a dog park. Yes, they wind up having racing stripes, and so does your back. Mm-hmm. So that gets us going toward our toward Moran Monday. A note on the chat room. It doesn't appear to be there anymore. In case you were trying to get into the chat room and you didn't, or unless I'm doing something really, really wrong, I don't think I am. I think mid-March was the drop-dead date for Java-supported chat platforms, and I checked earlier today, and I checked right before airtime. It's part of why I was a little late starting the program. And could not get the chat room to load. So there's a distinct possibility that the chat room, after a long and happy time, has gone to its long home. So that's unless somebody knows different. What do you mean? Okay. Sparky's telling me I did something wrong. All right. Well, I love hanging out in the chat room. Truly, I do. Okay. So there's Head on Radio Network. .com/chat room. And click. This web page cannot be found. How bizarre. Okay, well, I have no idea. All right, let's try. Well, how utterly bizarre. It works fine at headon.live, so y'all may need to know that as much as I did. It works fine at headon.live. It does not work at headonradionetwork.com, and go freaking figure why. So, but I'm in the chat room now. If you pick out a screen name and a password and you go to headon.live, you can be in the chat room too. That's just freaking weird. Oh, well, cool. another thing gone sideways. Oh, well, we'll get through all this, won't we? Yeah. So, let's see. I think that's all the shilly-shallying and carrying on that we have to do. And we can get into the heart of things. This is good. Marty with a note. But will it be stormy where you are? Oh, stormy. Really doesn't matter if it's stormy where I am. It sure is stormy at the White House. Fascinating business, that. That highfalutin pettifogging lawyer that Stormy Daniels, otherwise known as Stephanie Clifford, back when she was born and her parents had no idea she would grow up to be a porn star, gave her. Well, she's got a lawyer by the name of Michael Avenatti, who is apparently no slouch as a lawyer. At one point in time, he hauled down a $450 million verdict in the state of California and made it stick. So he's not worrying about where his next meal's coming from, so he didn't. Apparently, Stormy didn't just, you know, lift him out of the gutter to no. He knows his plaintiff's gamesmanship, and I'd imagine that there is probably some sphincter tightening going on round about the White House. Because he's put Michael Avenatti has put, hard to imagine you could do this, but he's put the White House in a box. Because he's made a settlement offer. And that settlement offer expires this Friday. Mark your calendars. Yes. This Friday, the settlement offer to whereby Ms. Clifford, a.k.a. Stormy, has offered to give back the $130,000 she was paid for her silence becomes, that offer falls off the table. It expires. And among other things, what's fascinating about this is that dipshit Donnie can't accept the money. Oh, he'd love to have the money. Remember, he's not nearly as rich as he wants people to think he is. And he would love nothing more than to have $130,000 back that he never had to put up in the first place because Michael Cohen says he got the money out of his own home equity line of credit. No kidding. But Stormy's offering to give the money to Geezer Disgustus. There's a hitch, though. The settlement offer says that the contract by which the settlement will be accomplished has to be signed by Donald Trump himself. Oops. Now, meanwhile, she still has those aforementioned, presumably salacious photographs and videos. Let's see, in the settlement letter, the quote is, text messages, photos, and or videos. But now there's a... So it looks like, whether we like it or not, if the for-profit media cooperate, we may very well be seeing some photographs of Donald Trump that we really don't want to see, but which will prove that he's a liar and has already lied about it, and as such is, according to what I like to call the cleanest standard, impeachable. Mm-hmm. The other thing that came out of this is the fact that Stormy has been interviewed by Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper for 60 minutes. And the word made the rounds over the weekend that the Trump administration would like to somehow or another sue to prevent Stephanie Clifford, a.k.a. Stormy Daniels, and CBS from airing the interview. Mm-hmm. We know there was an interview because in the settlement offer letter, there's a direct reference to a recent interview with Anderson Cooper of 60 Minutes. What is particularly fascinating is the idea that the Trump White House is casting about trying desperately to find some way whereby they can pretend the First Amendment to the Constitution does not exist and suppress and bury and disappear forever that interview. For a court to say to CBS that it couldn't air the interview would amount to something that's referred to in First Amendment law as a prior restraint. And I'll just put it mildly. Prior restraints in the eyes of courts are extremely disfavored. They're not liked because it amounts to censorship of the Fourth Estate. The only profession, I might remind us all, the only profession that actually gets mentioned in the Constitution. There are a couple of onlys in the Constitution. Only one crime is defined in the Constitution. That is treason. And only one profession, the press, is mentioned. How interesting that in the case of the tormented, demented reign of Geezer Disgustus, we might see an intersection of the two. A responsible press that putting information forward proves the treasonous behavior of the, by my reckoning, pretty obviously deeply mentally damaged individual who is the president of the United States and has, you know, access to the nuclear codes. Well, there's that too. Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana, pointing out, Bob, since he's not a reader, just put the settlement in front of the orange asshole and tell him it's a bill ending Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. He'll be so excited he'll get a tiny orange boner while signing it. Oh, wait a minute. And you were... Now, hold on a day. And you were the one worried about having your meal ruined by me doing naked radio. Thanks for the sour persimmons, brother. Tiny orange boner, indeed. Meanwhile, note coming in from... Steve in New York, who said, couldn't resist. For your information, the Supreme Court has roundly rejected prior restraint. Walter Sobchak. Is it, do I? Yeah, I do. A Walter Sobchak reference that's as on point as that definitely gets a cowbell. Yes. This is not Vietnam. There are rules. Mark at zero. Meanwhile, Steve from Georgistan, it points out the issue is not that the Saffron Stalin is not as rich as he wants people to think. The guy's broke. I guarantee he has an allowance from Russia, but he's personally insolvent. It occurred to me that that's why he's nickel and diming all of the Secret Service, etc., with staying at his properties and overcharging them. Well, there's that, too. But speaking of the... Okay, we'll get there. We'll get there. Speaking of the Secret Service, I'm pretty sure this is a real story. It was, among other things, published in the Boston Globe. It was published in the Boston Globe on March the 9th of this year. See if this gives you something like a combination. Oh, okay. That was not Steve from Georgistan. That must have been... that was Steve in New York from a different email address. Like I said, we've got a fraternity of Steve. You can't tell the Steves without a program. Okay, well it was every bit as eloquent as something you would have said, Steve from Georgistan. I think as a member of the fraternity of Steve, all you Steves can take pride in the work of other Steves, and sometimes even get credit for it. Mm-hmm. Dear God, you people. All right, Scott. Subject line, tiny orange boner. Scott and Punky note, we refer to that as having achieved, quote, a tumescent presidential circus peanut. Oh. I try. I mean, we like to be lighthearted and stuff around here, but I generally don't like to get into the gutter before the program's, you know, a half an hour old, but, well, there we are. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Scott. No, really, thanks so very much. Trying to do a serious radio program around here in the Peanut Gallery. Well, sir, damn it! Okay. No, this is serious. Okay, all right, we're going to have to work this out on air, too. Note coming in from Steve in New York. All the Steves should get credit for anything a particular Steve says. I think we have a new... A new bright line rule. All Steves receive credit for anything another Steve says if the other Steves want credit for it. Okay? Very good. Very good. Okay, it's the 12th of March, 2018, and that's a new rule. Very good. No, this is a creepy as hell story. Came from the Boston Globe, like I said. there's a bill sneaking its way through the House of Representatives. It is, well, and what it is a, it's the Homeland Security Reauthorization Bill. Yeah, you just know that's going to have all kinds of stuff in it that you don't want. Well, here's one of those things. The Homeland Security Reauthorization Bill has a rider in it that would empower, just hear this out and then, you know, let the shrieking commence. If you want to scream about this in the phone call portion of the program, it's really not that far away. The Mar-a-Lago Mussolini, if this bill, as it is written, gets all the way through the House and all the way through the Senate, and then he signs it into law, which is not that much of an out there kind of a consideration. The President of the United States, in this case, Geezer Disgustus, would be empowered to send Secret Service agents to polling places all over the country during any federal election. Massachusetts Secretary of State William F. Galvin said, this is worthy of a third world country. I'm not going to tolerate people showing up at our polling places. I would not want to have federal agents showing up in largely Hispanic areas. You know, for starters. The potential for mischief here is enormous. If you want to go and find where this miserable idea is floating around in Congress, like I said, look for the reauthorization of the Department of Homeland Security legislation. And I was wrong. It's not working its way through the House of Representatives. It's already gone through it. It's been passed. Now, on the other hand, it did not get included in the Senate's version in the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. And the full bill, the whole bill still has to be approved by the full Senate. Here's the catch. It would then go to a conference committee where the two versions would be reconciled, and theoretically, well, not you don't even have to use theoretically. And if they so decided, this provision could be put back in and sent on to the president's desk after the reconciled version was repassed by both houses. Think about that for a minute. Mr. Galvin, Secretary Galvin in Massachusetts, says he wouldn't want them going to, wouldn't want SS agents going to. And it really would kind of make them the SS now, wouldn't it? Wouldn't want them going into largely Hispanic areas. I can think of all kinds of areas I would not want them going into. I wouldn't want them going into American areas. Because the president having the power to send enforcers in to just sort of keep an eye on the polls, if you know what I mean. I mean, this is one of the dirtiest and oldest tricks in the Jim Crow playbook. A means of soft intimidation to keep people from voting. And we know going forward that in 2020, and in 2018 for that matter, and in every election for the foreseeable future, the key to any Republican victory is making sure that people don't vote unless there's the unless they're the white kind, I mean right kind of people. It's pretty damn serious. And a number of secretaries of state throughout the country are less than happy about this. See, if you think about it, this has its roots in the bizarre and paranoid ravings of the Cantaloupe Caligula, going back to the 2016 elections when he said all manner of illegal voters voted in Massachusetts. They were bussed in or some such. Or Massachusetts people slipped over the border to New Hampshire to vote, thereby giving the Electoral College votes for New Hampshire to the devil, right? It goes without saying that this didn't happen, and there's no evidence to suggest it did. But evidence has never been something that has been required inside the frayed and tattered, hollowed out danglings between the ears of Marcus Aurelius. As the Globe points out, the law as it currently stands says, and this only makes sense, that the Secret Service can go to a polling place when the president, or like the vice president, go to vote. They practically go to the bathroom with the president. You okay in there, sir? Sir, are you? Have you got enough paper, sir? Good, just checking. Meanwhile, Catherine Milhone said, the only time Armed Secret Service personnel would be at a polling place would be to facilitate the visiting of one of our protectees while they voted. That's what they say, but that's not what it says in the statute. No, that's not what it says as a matter, of law. It just says that the president can dispatch the Secret Service whither he might wish. And that is, disturbing to say the least. So we've got that to fret about, sadly. And since it is Moran Monday, I just dispensed with the Calliope music. I was so eager. We learned about Calliopes from Anderson Vanderbilt Cooper, and I was so eager to talk about the his interview with Stormy Daniels that I dispensed with the Calliope music. But it is Moran Monday, and I don't know if you noticed this or not, but Attorney General of the United States of America, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, is terribly, terribly upset at the state of California, because the state of California does not want to let Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III impose his personal bigotries upon that humongous hunk of America. And so Sessions gave an address last week to police and sheriffs in California, and announced a lawsuit filed by the Trump administration against the state because California doesn't particularly want to help the feds chase down people who are in this country without complete color of law. Now, here's the funny part. Now, remember, we're talking here about Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. Footsie player with, for instance, Russian diplomats. A guy who got himself so mixed up with a bunch of Russians that he had to recuse himself from the Russia investigation. And there's some Civil War history here, too. Oh, no, not that, Bob. Yes, sorry. In speaking to, in this speech to the police and sheriffs in California, Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, Moran, declared, "There is no nullification. There is no secession." Not that there's been any mention of secession beyond the prattlings of the odd ducks up in the state of Jefferson and whatnot. But it was a little bit ironic that an attorney general of the United States of America, who is named after Jefferson Davis, Pierre Gustave Toutant Beauregard, both of them criminals from the Civil War, that he would accuse California of engaging in nullification. Nullification is a matter that occurs when a state passes a law that says that the federal law that supersedes it is a nullity, a nothing. California hasn't done that. Among other things, Sessions decided to wave the bloody shirt at the mayor of Oakland, California, Libby Schaaf. He claims that Libby Schaaf warned undocumented immigrants of a coming sweep by the ICE, ICE holes. So, you know, it seemed to me that he certainly belonged in the pantheon of morons for this Monday, the 12th of March, 2018. He is a vile creature, to say the very least. And we could certainly say, if I said the very most, I'd just be swearing for the next 2 hours and 12 and a half minutes or so. And that's how that works out. So what else? Well, this. This could have waited for prayer meeting Wednesday. Very true, very true. Our buddy Hung Like Jesus says, why is it that the smallest people are always the ones climbing up on a high horse? Well, maybe because they're so small. Nobody notices a Keebler elf unless he's up on a high horse. My best guess. Well, like I said, this story, this Moran account could have very easily held on till Wednesday, but it's so moronic that it seemed appropriate to me to bring it to your attention this evening. Are you aware that there's a big kerfuffle over Joy Behar over to The View? And it's because she gave Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek a sad. Yes. This goes back to February the 13th, when remarking on the fact that the Vice President of the United States said that he really hears voices that he says are Jeebus. Well, she said that that's mental illness. And as the right-wing for-profit media described it, mocked his Christian faith. Okay? Yeah. Mocked it. This, of course, then occasioned. Okay, here's the original clip. It's embedded within a Fox News piece, so maybe.
Credit. The phone. She called me.
Okay. That's. Yeah. You need to shut up, Mike. I hate auto run audio. You cue things up and then they start up again, whether you like it or not. Here we go. And again, this also involves Tommy Lauren, which means that, you know, we got another more in, right?
It's one thing to talk to Jesus. It's another thing when Jesus talks to you.
Exactly.
Okay, well,
that's different.
Mental illness, if I'm not correct.
But
my question is, can he talk to Mary Magdalene without his wife in the room?
See, she made a funny that made Vice President Mike Pencilneck Geek look like the religious maniac that, you know, he is. Because we would probably do well to recall or take note that the mental health community has a general standard that says if you hear voices, any voices, you're probably not okay. If you're hearing voices that aren't there. I mean, if for instance, barring any sort of modern technology, if I right now was sitting here and I told you that I heard Agnes's voice inside my head and did not indicate to you somehow or another that I was imagining it or hypotheticalizing it, you would all be correct in assuming that I had a problem. Because I would be suffering from, not to put too fine a point on it, auditory hallucinations. And I can say I've had auditory hallucinations. They were a very, very long time ago. And they were brought on by my ingestion of a certain sort of fungus. To be precise, a mushroom. A mushroom that generally likes to grow in pastures. And you can see things, and you can hear things, and as the prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him, said, you can get your third eye squeegeed clean. I did. I had auditory hallucinations. I heard things that were not there, and nobody was on the phone. There was no TV and no radio. The things I heard emanated strictly from between my ears. Well, I think it's safe to say that Mike Pencilneck Geek doesn't do any mushrooms. Probably also safe to say he would be a better human being if he did. That whole hallucinogenic experience, not that I'm recommending it for anybody, but it provided me with some, well, perspective. Which, in turn, is probably why things like that have been used by various human cultures over the eons, all over the planet. But you heard that. You heard the clip. It was pretty. It was pretty innocuous. If you're hearing people who aren't there, isn't that the definition of mental illness? And yes, in point of fact, it is. This, of course, occasioned outrage, I tell you, outrage, over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda.
It's another thing when Jesus talks to you, that's called mental illness. That was Joy Behar yesterday on The View. They were responding to a clip from Amorosa where she was talking about her time at the White House, and she said that Mike Pence said Jesus tells him to say things, and that's what precipitated that conversation.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn about keep your rolling clips of The View because we're making it relevant again. I like life when for 5 years we ignored The View.
You aren't interested in the crazy things they say to
not
America?
Really.
Wait, okay. How is it crazy to say that someone who has auditory hallucinations is not suffering from some sort of mental illness? I mean, really, let's sort of unpack that. If he was saying he was seeing things that weren't there, in other words, if Jesus didn't just talk to him, but showed up in front of him, you know, all blonde-haired and blue-eyed, wearing a nice white robe, Jesus is about 6'4", you know, really buff, nicely trimmed beard. He's not, you know, he doesn't look anything like a Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life. Now, doesn't look anything like a little short, brown, curly-headed hippie or anything. No. He looks like Apollo, damn it. If Mike Pence said that Jesus was showing up, would we say that was okay too? Then again, I guess if you're a Christian, you get a pass on hallucination. That's what these people seem to be saying. I mean, I love the fact that for Douchey and Killweed and whoever the blonde of the moment is in the middle, I love it that it's crazy to say that hearing things is a potential indicator of mental fucking illness.
Because we give them ratings and they stay on television.
Well, let's ask Tommy Lahren. She's a Fox News contributor.
Oh, goody. White power Barbie.
Contributor. She's been following this story, and we wanted to have you on to get your opinion about it. What'd you think about Joy Behar mocking the vice president for his Christian faith?
Oh, my. She took a big breath getting ready for her star turn in the early morning on Fox and Friends.
Well, who is she to judge how often our vice president should speak to his Lord and Savior? Who is she?
Well, first of all, Tommy, she didn't do that, you dumbass. She didn't say a word about him talking to his Lord and Savior. She was talking about when the Lord and Savior talks back. And since when does Mike Pence speak fucking Aramaic? Because, you know, that was the language that Jesus spoke. I mean, that's why when Mel Gibson made his ugly little snuff film, he had to have Jesus speaking Aramaic, because Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, sandal-wearing, itinerant, semi-literate rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life, spoke Aramaic. We have no evidence that he spoke any other language. He was semi-literate, so he could probably mouth at a little bit of Hebrew from Torah, but that's about as far as it went. No Latin. Sorry, Roman Catholics. No King James English. Sorry, Protestants, Church of England types, Whiskey Episcopals and whatnot. Aramaic. So maybe it would be fun if this thing's going to continue. Might be kind of fun to ask Mike Pencil Neck Geek to maybe to decline an Aramaic noun or conjugate a verb in Aramaic, assuming, of course, he's allowed to conjugate outside the presence of his wife. I kind of lifted that from the other Joy Behar joke, but damn, it's a gift that keeps on giving, that weirdness of his about his wife and other women and the evil temptations of the seductress Jezebels out there. That would be all of y'all, by the way, in case you're wondering. As Clarity points out, religious experience is borderline excuse for a mental condition, schizophrenic catch-all for auditory hallucinations. All right. I mean, otherwise, how do you draw the line? Does somebody have to die?
Jesus told me to drown my babies in the bathtub, and I heard Jesus, and I did.
I mean, I remember way, 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 way back when I was having my cup of coffee in law school. There was a story. No, not a story. It was actually a case. About a woman who wasn't all home, who hallucinated that she could fly, and in the middle of traffic got out of her car and began attempting to do so. And when the relevant authorities finally caught up with her with the butterfly net, they asked her why, and she said, well, Jesus told me to, and since Batman can fly, so can I. Thereby proving that she was not sane because Batman can't fly. Only Superman. Wait a minute. But you get the idea. Yes. Note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. Hey, Bob, imagine if you had to spout this kind of BS knowing full well you don't believe a damn word of it. Well, and that's why we try to raise $200 every evening and not $20,000, and that's why I'm toddling around in a vehicle with 150,000 miles on it and, you know, not running around in a, what was that, the brand-new Bentley like that preacher in what was it, Pittsburgh? Yeah. I don't have the stomach for it. But I mean, I'd kind of like to, you reckon the Pope would chime in on this? I mean, the Roman Catholic Church and the Greek Orthodox Church, the early church generally, is the one that got us started on all this. You know, the Christianity gets a big early boost from an assertion that Jesus came back from the dead and that people were walking around sticking hands in wounds and shit like that. And then it gets the biggest boost of all from a guy who never set eyes on Yeshua, the brown-skinned, sandal-wearing, Palestinian day laborer and semi-literate, itinerant rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life. Saul. Never saw him. Couldn't have picked him out of a lineup. but claims to have seen him in a vision when he was struck blind on the road to Damascus, and after that everybody gets to have religious hallucinations, and we all have to pet them on the head and give them a fucking cookie. And so now, thanks to Saul, we have to, there's a pity party on for the religious maniac vice president of the United States, and we have to give him a fucking cookie. Yeah, Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, it's one thing if you hallucinate the Veep's voice in your noggin, but are you telling us that Brother Kenneth Copeland's back and forth conversation with the Lord about the comfort of his private jet was also mental illness? Label me a skeptic, Brother Bob, but I'm not buying it. Well, no, of course not, because Kenneth Copeland never had a conversation, a two-way conversation with Jesus Christ about a Gulfstream 5. And the voices in Mike Pence's head that tell him how upsetting it is that the Homer sectionals can go and pick out a China pattern are Mike, that's Mike Pence's superego, or Mike Pence's ego, or Mike Pence's id, or some other portion of Mike Pence. And I think, is there a psychiatrist out there? You know, board certified, been to medical school and all of that? Is there a PhD holding psychologist that will validate what Mike Pence is hallucinating? Well, you know, it could be Jesus' voice. No, they won't, because they want to keep on with their license. And if they said that people really are hearing the voice of a dead guy from 2,000 years ago, well, maybe you can go into Christian counseling. But I don't know if the insurance is going to pay you anymore. Kenneth Copeland said, Lord, I sure do need a Gulfstream 5. And the other Kenneth Copeland voice in his head said, yes, you do, Kenneth. Because the thing is, nobody knows, there's no way, you can't identify Jesus' voice or Muhammad's. Or Allah's. Or, I don't know, Ganesha's. Or the Buddha's. Do the Buddhas run around? I mean, they have visions and stuff like that, but really? No. You don't hear a lot about it. I mean, I follow some of this stuff fairly closely. And the problem is, if you acknowledge that Mike Pence, moron, if you acknowledge that Mike Pence's auditory hallucinations are real, then Jesus really is telling these mommies to drown their children in the bathtub, and you gotta give them a pass on it. Well, Jesus said they gotta go. Meanwhile, Matt, in San Francisco, says, what Pence needs, subject line, Mike Pence doesn't need Jesus, he needs lithium. Well, I was kind of rooting for a Thorazine dart in the neck, Matt, but I get your point. Meanwhile, Scott and Punky, Mike Pence conjugating outside the bounds of marriage, he's not even permitted to masticate. Oh, you've gone pro this evening. Absolutely. That's a solid jingle for masticate. Oh, wait. Okay. We had a complete misunderstanding of Brother Deacon Ace's earlier message. It's one thing if you hallucinate the VWPP's voice, the Viking warrior pharaoh princess, in your noggin, but yeah, and then okay, but see, that's I don't. The most I can do is imagine that I should probably not say something or should say something, because it will then incur the wrath of Almighty Agnes. This is not the same as an active hallucination, not by a long shot.
Well, okay, so we'll take a few more sentences here from White Power Barbie, who has started out, you know, because she's White Power Barbie, by lying, because Joy Behar didn't say anything about what he says to Jesus or how often he should. I mean, if your praying gets in the way of you doing your job, you should probably pick one or the other. Sir, you're the president of the United States now that Geezer Disgustus is in the home. There's been a nuclear missile launch. Let me pray on it, sir. We've got 20 seconds to do something. Well, I'll only pray for 19, and then I'll get a 1 second. Sir. No, I need to pray. I've got unforgiven sins before the missiles hit. You see how that becomes a problem. Anyway, back to White Power Barbie.
To mock anyone for their faith. These people are really, really amazing to me because they preach day in and day out about tolerance and...
No, they don't preach. Preachers preach. People in religions preach. They talk. They discuss. They describe. They critique. They don't preach. And tolerance is going, yeah, okay. But what White Power Barbie here and Steve Ducey and Brian Kilmeade and whoever the blonde in the middle is, what they don't want tolerance. They want elevation. They want everybody to have. Oh yeah, well, I mean, Mike Pence says Jesus talked to him. Well, we better find out what Jesus said to Mike Pence. Well, the only thing Jesus said to Mike Pence is the same thing Jesus always says to Mike Pence. Don't let the homosexuals get married, Mike. Tell the homosexuals they're all going to hell, Mike. I said so. Tell everybody that Sister Clerk Kim Davis is the most beautiful woman in America. You were afraid I was going to ruin a meal. Take that, Jeff. Religion is and always has been the ultimate snowflake. The ultimate precious darling. The ultimate pampered prince and princess. Because you can't talk about the fact that it, well, probably isn't real. See, tolerance is saying, hey, we got a First Amendment, everybody can worship however anybody wants to worship or not worship, but we don't need it in the public square, we don't need to make a government out of it, but everybody's free to do as you choose as long as you're not hurting anybody else. Right? But there's nothing in the First Amendment that says that we somehow have to pat them on their weird little hallucinating heads and tell them how proud we are of them for the hallucinations they have. Now, if you start coming up with woodcuts and paintings like Salvador Dali and William Blake, well, that's art. And who's to say that the people who painted all the stuff on the cave walls in Altamira weren't hallucinating their little brains out? Cool. But does that also mean that I have to look at those cave paintings and say, those are real buffalo? Those are real ibexes. No. Because it's quite obvious that they're paintings. Brilliant, but they're paintings, not the real thing. Otherwise, you have to stand in front of you wind up yelling at paintings. Hey, Mona Lisa, can you hear me, hon? Yeah, what? And then if the Mona Lisa talks back, well, there you go. But White Power Barbie's so aggrieved. Oh, she's so aggrieved.
Love, tolerance and love for everyone, right, except conservative Christians. And then they can mock you and it's funny and you're something that they can use for their jokes around the table and they can all cackle about it. It's really disgusting, not surprising, but disgusting.
If you want Joy Behar.
Yeah, shut up, Tommy. You've got the IQ of a boiled rutabaga. So that brings us back to the present, where the right wingosphere is all head up and worried because ABC Disney won't make that Jewess apologize to the Christians what she was a-mocking for hearing hallucinations. Because it went from mocking Mike Pence to now. Well, she mocked every Christian in America, is what she done. You know, she's going to hell because the Jews killed Christ, right? Yeah. Joy Behar owed no apology. But, of course, when it finally comes down to it, our side always apologizes. And so it was that Joy Behar, it turns out, because apparently she likes being able to cash a paycheck every couple of weeks, whether she needs it or not, and she enjoys what she's doing, and she does it very well, and didn't want to be fired for it, because, of course, the precious little Christians, you know, I'm a Christian and you offended me. Then forgive me. Again, peace be upon the prophet Bill Hicks. No, the little Christians didn't forgive Joy Behar like their Savior told them to. They started calling advertisers on ABC. I'm never going to buy soap and wash my hands again because you offended my Christian faith. Get rid of her because she's a heathen, pagan, Jezebel Jew lady. And she done spewed the anti-Christian bigotry. Because she said, when I hear voices in my head, it ain't really Jeebus. And I know it's Jeebus. And you know how I know it's Jeebus? I asked him, I said, Jeebus, is that you talking to me? And the voice of Jeebus in my head said, well, sure it is. And that's how I know it was Jeebus. And see, look, Christians can be inspired. Muslims can be inspired. Jews can be inspired. Hindus, Jains, animists. Pick one. You can be inspired by your religious devotion. But that is not the same thing as saying that dead people are talking to you inside your head. See, Mike Pence sat down to talk to Sean Hannity job about it all and said, well, she called and she apologized, and that was the right thing to do because she didn't need to be mocking all them Christians out there. When the only person she was mocking was Mike Pencilneck Geek, and he desperately deserved it. Because, among other things, he's one of those hypocrites, one of those Pharisees who prays loudly in the streets, like Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian sandal-wearing gay laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life, said not to do. But Jesus Christ, he jumped up on the cross and nailed himself right in. I give Joy Behar a lot of credit. She picked up the phone. She called me. She was very sincere and she apologized. And one of the things my faith teaches me is grace. Forgive as you've been forgiven. Oh, get me a bucket.
So Mike Pence wouldn't have been able to forgive anybody if he wasn't a Christian. Mike Pence would have no concept of grace. Mike Pence would be unable to determine that human beings realize that other human beings are flawed and capable of mistakes. This is why these filthy hypocrites make me so sick. Jesus. Well, probably the wrong guy to be talking about there. Yes, Anatole in the chat room. Yes, atheists can be inspired. And the neat thing, it's even more impressive when an atheist gets inspired, because there were no supernatural forces acting upon the atheist. Never mind the fact that there are no supernatural forces acting on anybody else, but then again, they get a sad when we tell them that. But the whole religion is founded on hallucinations. One hallucination in particular, Saul on the road to Damascus. There's some good existential stuff in the words ascribed to Jesus in the New Testament, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. John's kind of an outlier. But none of it requires him to be murdered. And in the end, see, that's the thing. Mike Pence is a postulant of death. That's what he gets off on. Meanwhile, over at ABC, the CEO of ABC's parent company, Disney, Bob Iger, he had to have a little talk with the shareholders of Disney. He was at the shareholder meeting, and he said, Joy Behar apologized to Vice President Pence directly. She made a call to him and apologized, which I thought was absolutely appropriate. This is when a shareholder, a Christian who had bought stock in Disney, asked him about it. And he said, the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda story I've got here says, audio reveals that Iger appeared irritated and dismissive of the shareholder, sharply cutting off the exchange. Are you, not very much, but are you a little bit like me in one regard? Do you wish that someday one of these people who just speaks truth to power, and then all the precious little snowflake white wingers, the maggots, they get up in their high dudgeon and start shrieking and squealing about how they'll never do laundry again because she's done and insulted the millions of Christians. Do you just once wish that one of these people would look out and go, hey, evangelicals, suck it. Fuck you. Blow me. Bite me. Get off the cross. We all need the wood. Do you kind of wish they'd do that? Regardless of fear or favor? Of course, then we'd have to wonder whatever happened to them, because they wouldn't be employed anymore. Because, of course, corporations like Disney always bow to pressure. You know, if I could, I'd invite her on the program just to say, listen, ma'am, you can say what you really think here, and they can all, the Mike Pences and the Hannity Jobs and the Tommy Lawrence can all get together and play a rousing game of hide and go fuck yourself. Too bad.
Meanwhile, Bob down in Texas. Subject line voices. What about Satan pretending to be Jesus? Whoa, now see, there's a deep theological question. He does come in many guises, doesn't he? No, I'm Dodge. Yeah, hi, Mike. It's Satan. I mean, Jesus. Did you say Satan? No, I didn't say that. It's Jesus. It's Jesus here. Listen, I got a list of people that you need to hate and try to make their lives more miserable. Can you do that for me? Because, you know, that way you won't have to burn in hell. I told him he wouldn't have to burn in hell. We've already got the barbecue set up for him. No, could you do that for me? Yeah. Note coming in from Marty. The Jews killed Christ, right? I always shake my head and remind them that their Christ was a Jew. That's handy to have. Meanwhile, where Disney's concerned, Marty continues and says, of course, one of the bigger Disney shareholders is Steve Jobs' widow, I do believe. But they're so delicate. All of these little maggots are so precious and so delicate that they must be talked to as if they are 3 years old. And if they don't get everything they want, they're going to scream and stomp and raise hell till nobody else in the nation can enjoy anything. It's kind of like when you got an awful screaming kid on a plane or in a restaurant. And the parents don't have the gumption to make the kid stop doing that. So, that's the filibobster. And, thanks going out. Big thanks. Thanks very kindly, to John. Thank you, John, for, taking us down to $179 to go in fundraising for the evening. Thank you, John, very much. We're almost halfway through the program. And again, as always, if we meet the fundraising goal before the end of the program, I shut up about fundraising. So maybe it's kind of a game like that. Make Bob shut up about fundraising. So there's that, $179 to go so that we can pay all the damn bills and all of that stuff that goes with it. Subject line coming from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve. And all, remember, henceforward, if they wish to, all Steves get credit for this. Subject line, I'm weird that way. I don't believe in God. I acknowledge God's existence because I think God's, as a sentient force that governs the universe, existence is a fact. We can have that conversation another time. The point? I don't acknowledge or believe that God gives a consistent shit about us. It is with this in mind that I think there is nothing supernatural about God. God is nature, is all things, and is in all things. That's why, Steve, that's a rather deist notion. You know, the sort of thing that people like Adams and Jefferson and Washington believed. It is with that I think I find inspiration in beautiful, simple complexity of the universe and receive inspiration from it every day. One does not need inspiration from what is unseen. Peer into a night sky 100 miles from any city and you'll see a sky so full of stars that it is truly awesome. And the real inspirational part, millions of those stars no longer exist, but their light took billions of years to get to us, to where we can see them. If that's not inspiring, nothing is. By God, it is, and if it wasn't such a downer to play it, I'd play Don McLean's Vincent, Starry, Starry Night, but that's a suicide-y kind of song, and let's don't do that and say we didn't. But, the natural world is inspirational. The natural world is stunning. It is amazing. And when Steve says, I don't think God gives a consistent shit about us, he is echoing, whether you realize it or not, Steve, a passage from Kurt Vonnegut's Sirens of Titan. In which Malachi Constant gets off the rocket ship that has landed in, I think, Massachusetts, maybe New York, and says, thank God. And then all the people who are gathered together, well, they yell, why? And the first universal church of God, the omnipotently disinterested, or something like that. So I don't think we're that far apart where that's concerned. For all I know, the universe itself is a consciousness. Maybe it's a being, and we're all so tiny that we can barely conceptualize it. As I've said in the past, like being a single gene on a single chromosome on a single armpit hair. That's how insignificant we are. Yeah? Works for me. All right, let's take a break. Just ever so brief a one. And then we'll go to the conversational aspect of the program. And if you wish, we will engage in conversation. We got $179 in fundraising to go. No, we don't. We have $79 in fundraising to go. Holy cow. Holy mackerel. Thank you very kindly, Bob, down in Texas. That is a really, really big deal. That is a dollar-for-dollar challenge. Bob's kicked in $100 and wants to see another $100 come in to match it. So please, please be so kind as to honor Bob's request, and then we'll be done with fundraising. So that's the way it works out. It was at $179, so Bob kicked in $100, and with the hope in his heart that the other $100 will come in, and boom, we're done. Can we do that? That would be awesome indeed. Thank you, Bob. Thank you very, very kindly. That's how we keep this all going, and it beats the hell out of listening to laundry detergent ads, doesn't it? This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's More In Monday.
Starboard, let your cry lead us all through the night.
Rising from the ashes, your light will show us the
starboard
way.
Keep your light shining for all to see.
from a very, very long time ago when people still played instruments to make music. That's actually Manfred Mann's Earth Band. Mm-hmm. Starbird. It is 26 minutes before the hour. And we have a very generous matching challenge on the table, courtesy of Bob in Texas, looking for people to match the $100 that he just kicked in. And hopefully that will happen. Hey, let's say maybe in the next 25 minutes, and then there's an hour of fundraising free programming between the 8 and 9 o'clock hour here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. In the meantime, however, let's go and check in with... let's check in with Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Huckleberry Hound Dog, howdy to you, Bob, and all the fun lovers and truth seekers out there in Radio Land.
Three cheers and a tiger for you.
Amen. All right. I would like to address myself to two of the
items. Well, you're going to want a Sharpie, and I don't know if you want it where anybody can put it.
Anybody remember the addressograph machine?
Somebody does. I don't, but I'll get email now. Thanks.
Well, basically, and I digress, but basically it was a large device, and it featured little thin metal cards, if you will, like the size of Rolodex cards. And you would use a typing keyboard on this machine to emboss the letters, name, address, city, state, and zip code of the person on your mailing list. And then you would put each individual metal card into a little holder, and then you would load up the machine with all of these holders containing the embossed metal plates, and they would feed themselves through a mechanism underneath. Over top was it like a large typewriter-type ribbon, and you would lay your envelope down on that, hit the switch with your foot, the pedal, and it would address the envelope. It was pretty nifty technology back in the day, but that is, in a nutshell, an addressograph. But again, I digress. I wanted to address myself in whatever manner feasible.
Yeah, I prefer. The part that always threw me on that is having to write backwards on my own forehead while looking in the mirror. But you know.
Yes, or as Art Carney did on The Honeymooners when discussing golf. Step one: address the ball.
Hello, ball.
Hello, ball.
Although in my golfing career, it was usually you, little bastard. But
God. I don't know what it is about our heads, but we get on to these tangents, and by God, with a roadmap.
It's two radio people. Okay,
yeah.
That's what it is, Scott. I mean, you carry on a darn fine conversation, and I'll bet you're just dandy, you know, to sit down across a table with a couple of cups of exquisite freeze dried instant coffee, but. In this format, radio's a bicycle you never stop riding.
Yeah, and if network radio ever comes back, we should join forces with a national 3-hour program along these same lines, and we could bill ourselves as the Gruesome Twosome, and just amaze and delight.
I resemble that remark.
Amaze and delight people from coast to coast. But anyway, the two topics that you raised earlier are what I called about. One of them having, which I was not aware, the plan somewhat underway to enlist the Secret Service of the United States to go to polling stations at election time to oversee the proceedings. My main question, first of all, would be about how appropriate is that, and I would say not at all. But my other question is, even if they decide to do it, how do they intend to pay for it? Because as of last summer, last August, the Secret Service was already stretched pretty thin in terms of person power and budget, just covering Trump's frequent, all too frequent visits to Mar-a-Lago. So where would the money come from to dispatch these agents? That would be my first question. Never mind the improper...
Okay, can I jump in on question one then?
Oh, definitely. I was hoping you would.
There is a rule at work here, Scott. Yeah. When it's something Trump wants, there is always money for it. They will find a way. I mean, talk about putting you. We can't have. Do you remember? You're old enough. You remember the eight years of sanity that we recently experienced. You remember how any time we wanted to do anything to enhance the greatness of this country? That's a difficult thing to say without using that stupid fucking slogan. That there was a Republican. Well, we're going to spend our deficits we're putting our grandchildren into debt they can never pay their way, right? As if, we're going to have to carry the Capitol Dome down to the pawn shop and, put it in hock, our grandkids. Well, the tax bill is exactly that not on steroids, but on crazy gene splicing stuff. And the deficit's going to explode, and every spring the toilets explode. But no Republican worried about it. So rule one, if Trump wants it, there's a way to get it. If he wants a million man Secret Service, so that he can park a battalion outside every damn polling place in the country, the Republicans will give it to him.
Yeah, and who's going to pay for the brown shirts and the armbands, okay? I mean, if you're talking about SS, let's just rename the organization.
Well, those bastards wore black, but never mind. That's a point.
Who are the brown shirts? Who am I thinking of?
That was the SA.
Oh, well.
Ah, Jesus, 18 minutes before 8, and we're talking about Nazi history. Well, good for us, but no.
But the point remains, and what you've described, now that the shoe is on the other foot, it's the budgetary equivalent of when Jesus talks to Mike Pence.
By God, it is, isn't it?
I mean, when isn't it interesting how when Jesus talks to Mike Pence, he always whispers things that are totally contradictory to Jesus' own teachings in terms of loving one another and embracing the outcasts and the different. Isn't that interesting how that works out? But you're absolutely right. If Trump wants to do it, they will. But when the shoe is on the other foot, you couldn't squeeze a nickel out of those cheap bastards because they were obstructionists and malcontents, moaners, whiners, and complainers with three-cornered hats and puffy shirts and Revolutionary War firearms. Jesus, now you've got me mad. And I wasn't even mad when I called,
I have a talent for that.
So there's that. Now, the other thing is even more intriguing, involving my adopted home state of California and the latest scheme on the part of Jeff Sessions to sue the state of California over this so-called sanctuary cities and being soft on so-called illegal immigration. And if you're a fan of the PBS NewsHour, when this story broke last week, Governor Brown and I believe our attorney general addressed that matter. And basically, the thing was, they pointed out first and foremost that the Trump administration, based on the findings and the judicial processes thus far, is loaded with bullshitters and liars, okay? So first of all, you've got to question their veracity in terms of the story that Jeff Sessions is telling. And then there's also the part of, we will cooperate, we, the state of California, will cooperate in a way that is appropriate when the immigration and naturalization people bring an issue to our attention. However, we will not do the job. Our law enforcement people here in California will not do the jobs of ICE and immigration and all of those people. That was the point that
yeah,
the
it's
government...
a you know it's a union deal, not my job, man.
Well, yeah, you could call it that. So I mean, but they don't get it. The people. They're not truthful. They're not accurate, and they're not truthful, which is not a very good combination when it comes to discussing something. I mean,
okay. So here's another thing to sort of dovetail with the. So what it boils down to is Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions the Third wants to use the resources of the state of California to do a job that is supposedly the work of the ICE holes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, consider, consider Betsy DeVos.
Must I?
Well, I already had to, so, you know,
okay,
suck it up, Buttercup.
Misery loves company, so I'll join right in.
Consider the birds. Oh, now he's having a go at the birds. no, consider Betsy DeVos. She put out a federal Department of Education plan for dealing with gun violence in schools. And guess who has to do all the heavy lifting? The states and the local communities.
Yeah.
And the federal government sits back and says, I'll supervise. Or the talk of Trump's great big ginormous intergalactic infrastructure plan where the federal government kicks in 20% and tells the rest of the country, okay, y'all just come up with the other 80% and then we'll have us some infrastructure and we'll tell you how to use it and we'll tell you how to do it all. But we're only on the hook for 20%. You're on for 80. It's pattern and practice, Scott. Okay, I mean it is. By the way, I got to interrupt just for a minute because I just got a cowbell worthy note from our buddy Texas T, who says simply, "Bob, how come when Jesus speaks to me, he sounds like Foster Brooks?" Well, that's probably Jesus right after the wedding where he turned everything into wine.
Yeah. And it was great wine. As a matter of fact, they said, why did you save this really great wine to the end of the party, as I recall in my Bible.
I think you're right.
But yeah, what you're describing are, what we're both describing are instances of the shoe being on the other foot. And I think back, as far as I recall, the only power that the president has when it comes to federalizing individuals,
the National Guard,
would be federalizing.
Yeah,
troops.
But this isn't that. This is an entirely new critter. That if you believe the director of the Secret Service was inartfully written, but if you are somebody who is resisting Geezer Disgustus, you look at it and go, oh, look, well, wouldn't that be lovely? Just be able to send the Secret Service to, oh, I don't know, let's make sure that maybe, we've got too much violence in Chicago, so we'll send the Secret Service to make sure nobody goes in and votes in, Chicago.
And
they're
not going
to vote for Trump. Or maybe the Secret Service would need to invest the entire state of California.
Well, who's going to pay for it? And I should interject here that the staffing and budgetary concerns at the United States Secret Service It's not something, the issues involved are not something new that have occurred since Trump came into office. And we've spoken, or I've spoken, of my younger brother who spent like the better part of 25 years in the Secret Service until he retired over 10 years ago. And it was an issue 10 and 15 years ago when he was still on active duty. So again, I keep going back to the money. You know, how are they going to pay for it? And I know that they will find a way to do it and end up screwing a lot of us on a couple of levels, not only budgetarily, but, you know, butting in and going way outside the boundaries of the parameters of the Secret Service's job. I mean, come on. It's basically counterfeiting, internet fraud, and executive protection are the mandates of the Secret Service being a part of the Treasury Department. But now they want to enlarge those boundaries to a ridiculous point. And that's, and it wouldn't be, I mean, it would be bad enough if they were just enlarging the duties, but now they're taking it down.
You said duty.
They're trying to expand them to the point of overseeing the voting. And that ought to scare, a shiver ought to run up every American spine at the thought of that, because they can be up to great amounts of mischief in that arena. So who do we talk to keep this legislation from going through? Because I certainly we've got enough people in the House and the Senate with a few viable brain cells.
Well, I mean, it's in the Senate. The committee version didn't have it in it. And you need to, you know, you just need to in your case, being in San Diego, you need to make sure that Kamala Harris and,
Dianne Feinstein and my own Congresswoman Susan Davis.
You need to make sure that they all know that you know it's in there and that you don't want it in there and that this is a dangerous, because this is a guy who makes jokes about, Wouldn't it be great if I was president for life? Yeah. You know what? Let me be clear. And I'm not wishing any harm. I'm not Agent Fred. You know how we are here. Look, if nature takes its course and catches up with him before January the 20th, 2021, he will have been president for life. In which case, yeah. I guess I'm okay with him being president for life. But short of that, no. But that, and that's, well, that's, well, and that's an entirely separate thing too, Scott. Because just because we've got a mad ass in the Oval Office does not mean that I am not still decidedly opposed to the 22nd Amendment. The single most anti-democratic thing that has ever been done to the Constitution is term limiting a president. Because if you've got a democracy, then people have the right to choose the incumbent as well as anybody else. You know, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I'm just kind of going on record where that's concerned. But the thing is, he's not talking about getting rid of the 22nd Amendment. He's just talking about being able to name himself president for life, which is a scary thought, which is creepy AF, and leads us to our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. If Lee's listening in New York, Lee will immediately know which episode I'm talking about. The one where the Enterprise lands on the Nazi planet. Well, more Nazis. Hey, 753. But you finds an old sick man. You remember? You know the episode I'm talking about?
I may be conflating it with another episode. But is this one of the time travel ones? Or
No. They just happened to show up on a planet where, you know, Nazi authoritarianism has been introduced as a. Well, among other things, it's a great big whopping violation of the Prime Directive, for starters.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure I know the episode, but it's been probably more than a few years since I last saw it.
So, well, somebody will tell me in a minute. Here, let me get back to my email. It's probably already in the box. Well, I tell you what, when an iPad gets really, really old, it gets really, really slow. But, no, not yet, not yet. On the other hand, James offers a note, a secret Gestapo. Is that constitutional? States run elections. We have 50 elections, not one. But if it just went through as a blanket, the president shall have the authority to dispatch the Secret Service wherever he wisheth, yeah, that would have to be constitutionally challenged. But there's always the argument to be made that the Congress has the right to make pretty much any law that it wants to.
And
remember, it's under the rubric, not of elections, but of Department of Homeland Security. We're just protecting the polling places by making sure no one gets in them.
Yeah, but it's an imaginary protection that they are envisioning because...
Well, shit, when was that anything new, Scott?
Yeah, I know. But
Mexican rapists? Well, that's a problem that didn't exist that they invented.
Yeah, but they did a study that went back some years and found that in like a decade, or maybe it was more than a decade, they came up with maybe a handful, less than 10, people voting when they shouldn't have. Am I making something up? I'm pretty sure I recall...
No. They think that there were millions and millions of people who snuck in to vote for the devil.
No, beyond that, before that, I'm talking about a study that was done in the last 6 months or so, and they gave their findings, and it had to do with a long-term look at so-called election fraud, and they couldn't find more than...
Oh, no, there's none out there, right, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Voter fraud.
Voter fraud.
There's plenty of election fraud. Voter fraud, not so much. I mean, I just saw the other day a list of people who didn't get to vote, and there's just insane stuff. A woman lost her driver's license, couldn't vote. I mean, you know, because people lose driver's licenses. Sometimes people lose a driver's license the day before the election or the day of the election. No driver's license, no vote. And septuagenarians and octogenarians and nonagenarians and 19-year-olds, and you don't vote. That's voter, you know, all of this voter ID crap is voter suppression.
Yeah.
And of course, if there's any, you know, if there's any joy in Mudville, it's this circus that Chris Kobach is making of himself in trying to represent himself in litigation brought by the ACLU in Kansas.
I was reading about that the other day. The judge had repeatedly to let him know that he was off base in his assertions or his arguments or his approach, whatever it was.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, good news. We're 2 minutes before the hour, but we are $19 closer to meeting. Meeting Bob's challenge. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you. Thank you very, very much indeed. So that leaves 60. That leaves 60 remaining. So hopefully we can knock that down. A couple of notes coming in. Albert from Rhode Island says, what would you say happened if he asked to be president for life and then gets struck by a lightning bolt? I'd say, you know, I don't know. The program is off for the evening while I run to the liquor store and violate my determination not to drink. No, I wouldn't do that. No, that'd just be wrong. The Christians
well,
might get upset.
Think about it though for a second. Try to get your head around the notion of Donald Trump president for life. And he's what, 71, 72 as we speak?
Yeah.
And probably, I mean, he's not in the best of health, I don't think.
No, they're making him eat fish now, and he hates it.
Yeah.
They're making him eat salad, and he despises it.
Good, good. I mean, we should not be the only ones.
And by the way, Ron and Raleigh and Jimmy have also both chimed in to let us know that the episode I'm talking about of Star Trek is Pattern of Force. Thanks, Jimmy. Thanks, Ron.
I've got that either on Netflix or Amazon Prime.
Oh, and VT Blom had it in the chat room too.
Rewatch that.
Yeah, I can't sneak anything past anybody where it comes to Star Trek.
But like I'm saying, he's been in office now for roughly 12 months, going on 13. Is that about right?
Well, January 20th, February 20th. Yeah, we're coming up on the 14th month in 8 days.
Okay, so we're talking about just shy of a year and a half, just shy of 18 months pretty soon. And am I alone in noticing that not only, well, it just seems like forever, never mind president forever, in the time that he's been in, and you add to it the, you know, the run-up to the election, it seems like that crazy bastard has been a thorn in everybody's side for fucking ever.
Well, and then you know, we really haven't touched directly on it, but that the madness of his rally, for want of a better word, in Western PA in Moon Township.
Yeah,
the other
where
night.
He went on for an hour, just doing word salad to beat the band.
And couldn't, for the life of him, be bothered to mention the name of the candidate he showed up for.
Exactly, because it's about me. And you know that crazy bastard's coming here to San Diego tomorrow. And I was musing on Facebook last night, mulling over whether or not to go protest. Because there, you can bet your bottom dollar there are going to
add one more voice to the din, absolutely.
Big-ass protests here in downtown Oz tomorrow. We even had some today, from what I understand, outside the federal building. But then I thought back to the election, the run-up to the election, when he came here, and there was fucking blood in the streets and tear gas and multiple arrests. You were doing the play-by-play on the show.
Oh, I remember. Yeah, I do.
So, I mean, I don't know that I want to be caught up in that. I mean, I... If,
well,
I,
that's
I
true.
Could,
you might, you might. You, well, yeah.
I mean, I have sometimes jumped right in with both feet when it comes to stupid moves. But if I can look ahead and say, no, I don't think I'm going to do that. I'll stay home and watch it on TV from the helicopter cam or the drone cam or whatever NBC San Diego covers the news with nowadays. I mean, you know, and I can say it, if it gets too tense, I can fix a drink.
Yeah, and
you know?
Unfortunately for us, we've always got stay classy, San Diego.
And I would do it. I mean, if only for the benefit of being the horn correspondent on the scene. But I don't know that I'm up for it, given the type of people on the other side who tend to show up for those.
Well, if this may help make your decision for you. VT Blom in the chat room pointing out when he's visited here in Florida, there's a 1 mile clear zone around all of his appearances. You're screened before being allowed any closer.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. I mean,
so I was about to ask that question. You know, whatever happened to W's First Amendment zones? Well, the First Amendment zone is somewhere outside a 1 mile perimeter. That's some amendment, that First Amendment.
And I remember in the 80s when George H.W. Bush came to Kansas City, my brother was on the detail, and it was at, I think it was at the Municipal Auditorium, if I remember correctly, in Kansas City. And there were two electronic checkpoints that you have to go. He, in other words, he made it possible for me to sit in the back of the auditorium and watch. And I think he came to tell him to talk about drugs or something. And that was back in the 80s. And back then, the security was strict. So I imagine today it's got to be crazy. I mean, what did he say? A mile ring around the venue?
Yeah. Marty wants you to know. Marty says, tell Scott and Punky that all of them should stand and then pull the Klingon discommendation from Star Trek, The Next Generation, Sins of the Father. Oh, Marty's working on that double Star Trek reference now. So, okay. A little bit of breaking news. I don't know if you caught this or not, but the House of Representatives Committee, the House Intel Committee,
I saw that, yeah.
has abruptly closed shop and gone home and declared no collusion. There was definitely no collusion. No collusion. No collusion. Slow in the driveway. No collusion with Russia. Definitely no collusion. And shut down its investigation into the 2016 assault on our attempt to have a clean, fair election, as close as we're capable.
That's Devin Nunez's.
Exactly. Who apparently? Well, I'm beginning to wonder how many of these Republicans are, you know, in it too. Karen Hobart Flynn, the president of Common Cause, an organization that I respect, but I'm sure is somehow ideologically pure. Karen Hobart Flynn said, Americans deserve the truth and leaders who will put country before party in delivering it. The House Intelligence Committee's investigation into the 2016 attacks on our democracy, of course, we always put an asterisk by our democracy. Reminder, our democracy is aspirational and not operational, lost the trust of the American people many months ago. This was in large part due to Chairman Devin Nunez's dereliction of duty, aided and abetted by many of his colleagues on that committee who are more interested in covering for President Trump than investigating what happened. As we await the full report from the committee, which we will read with skeptical interest, we renew our call for an independent commission with the authority to investigate what happened and to make recommendations for how to protect against future attacks. Special Counsel Mueller's probe into any criminal activity must remain independent and free from interference and obstruction. All of that makes absolutely perfect sense. And here's what's not going to happen. As long as this Congress remains in place, there will not be any independent commissions, and there will be and never will be heard a discouraging word. And the sun will be and the suns are not cloudy all day over Mother Russia.
And aren't those deer and antelope cute as they're playing out on the fjords?
Yeah, fjords, those are Norwegian.
Well,
where the deer skis and antelopeviches play. Yes, da.
Exactly. Well, anyway, Bob, I was so full of hope and joy when I called, and now I'm pissed off. What the hell did you do to me?
That's my job, okay?
I just don't know.
Apparently Punky's hung it up and gone to talk to himself in the mirror.
No, he's sitting on top of his house. He was a little chatty earlier. And the cat, I mean, that cat must sleep 20 hours a day.
Well, in the next life, and again, that's her job.
Yeah.
Or his.
I want to come back as a cat, but only as a cat that I have owned in the past, because I know that I treat him as well as I can. Well, wait a minute, Punky's awakened and he's looking over at me saying, you talking to Bob?
Yes, Punky, and we're talking about you.
But he is strangely quiet today, and that's good. I was hoping he would be, because earlier he was pretty chatty. But anyway, maybe I'll free the line and let somebody else get in, because I know that they're out there.
All right. Well, have yourself a good evening. Don't go to the rally. Don't do that to yourself. Just don't.
Okay? Well, see, I'm not so much worried about getting in within the 1 mile. Free speech zone or whatever. I am worried about the people on either side outside of the zone, okay? Because that's where the trouble is. I mean, and I hope to God that our side behaves responsibly tomorrow, because we don't need any black eyes, in the public arena. If there's any bad stuff to be done, I hope it's happening on the red hat wearing minions.
Well, I'm not so worried about the maggots as I am the Nazis. You know, they're a subset of the maggots.
Yeah.
So
I really did consider going down there, because it's just a quick trolley ride, you know. But given some of the outburst, like that audio that audio was so chilling that you played last week at the Revolution Bookstore up in Berkeley.
Yeah.
That chilled my blood when I heard that guy.
Well, and they're out there, and they're all over this country, and there's a hell of a lot more of them than the precious millionaire pundit class wants to admit.
And don't be fooled. California is a blue state through and through, but there are pockets of unreality.
Oh, sure.
Occupied mainly by the Trumpansies.
Yeah, look at those State of Jefferson goons.
You know, and they do show up. I mean, I think back when the Iraq invasion stuff was going fast and furious in the early 2000s, 2003, 2004, I went to a couple of anti-war rallies here in town, and there was a healthy contingent of supporters of that incursion. And they, in the intervening 12 or 15 years, they've only gotten more rabid and crazier.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean,
you know,
look,
under the Trump banner.
We had another, you know, there was another shooting. And of course, in California, at the largest veterans home in the country.
Yeah.
And it was a guy whose brains got scrambled by what he witnessed and lived through in Afghanistan.
So answer me this, Mr. Bob, with your Karnak-like turban on your head. If the president has said, he's gone on the record and said, that the main issue at hand with gun violence is mental illness. If PTSD is a mental disturbance, if not an illness outright, how is it that someone suffering with that and being treated for that has access to these weapons?
Well, the answer is, like the guy in Sunderland, Texas, there are supposed to be mechanisms whereby you can prevent that from happening. But where this guy was concerned, I don't think that's necessarily applicable. But let me, based on the content of the program this evening, let me ask you another question.
All right.
If that guy said that Jesus told him to shoot up that Veterans Center, is he crazy?
Oh, I think so. But
well, no. I'm asking you to apply the mic. The aggrieved, precious, evangelical Mike Pence standard.
Well, when it comes to voices in people's heads giving marching orders, I consider all of them suspect.
So once again, we are troubled with that line, where we draw the line, on being talked to by deities. So is it
if you're talked to by deities
and you take action?
Well, it's not just being talked to by deities, Bob. It's not just the voices in these people's heads. It's the notion of someone who, by all outward appearances, seems rational and normal, but yet, on a regular basis, they themselves are speaking to invisible entities.
Right, but I mean, I'm not being a, I'm not being a, I'm being somewhat acerbic here, but not a total smartass. I'm trying to figure out what we do. So if you take action with a gun on something Jesus tells you to do, you know, or a knife or a sword or a pair of nunchucks or whatever, or your fists, then you're crazy. On the other hand, if the only action you take when Jesus talks to you is that you pursue legislation that does grave harm to tens of millions of human beings, then we have to be gentle and precious and give them a fucking cookie. I mean, is that it? I mean, I'm not carping at you.
No, I know you're not. I'm
stymied by this. So Mike Pence, for all of his talk about grace and forgiveness and that bullshit, because there's not a word of truth in it, because the man's not a Christian, the man is not even vaguely, he's something, but he is not a follower of Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian sandal-wearing day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi who wore a dress every day of his life. He's not that. So, I don't know what we do about this, because the man has spent his life trying to hurt other people, and he claims that the doors of paradise will swing wide for him when he is done on this planet and his spirit floats up into the sky or what the hell ever.
Of course he does. And do you know why?
Because it's good for business?
Well, yeah, there's that. But to answer the question, who is he? Let's transport him magically back 2,000 years and find out where in the pecking order he might have been when Jesus was being hauled before the authorities on trumped-up charges.
Well, I think it's fairly clear that fucker would be I'd say Pharisee. The Pharisees were said to be the ones that did, you know, they did the proselytizing and stuff. You know, there's the Sadducees and the scribes and the Pharisees. He's either a Sadducee or a Pharisee.
Or Pilate. He could wear many hats.
Now, he's not smart enough to be Pilate.
Well,
we used to have a running joke. We'd see a guy driving a particular General Motors brand of vehicle that no longer exists. And one of us would go, "There goes the guy who condemned Jesus." "Why do you say that?" "He's a Pontiac Pilate." I know. Old pun, but still. I try.
That's the only downside with Trump leaving office is Pence waiting in the wings, because in comparison, a lot of people see him as just perfectly sane and rational.
No, we've entered a new era where vice presidents don't necessarily automatically get the nod. You know, part of the reason Joe Biden didn't run was because it was her turn. And so I don't think Pence is an automatic. I've still got a $5 bill, and it's going to yield a hell of a return. I've still got a $5 bill on Ivanka for January the 20th, 2025.
Oh, I know. And hopefully this episode
that comes in, this program is funded for fucking ever. No shit.
If we learn any meaningful and useful lessons from this adventure called Trump, hopefully it will be the same amount of time between Herbert Hoover and Dwight David Eisenhower will have elapsed before we see another Republican president.
And a lot of that's going to have to do, you know, this is one of the arguments that I made back during the election, that whoever was president was going to be president during the administration of the next census, and that's going to have a lot to do with how Congress is apportioned.
Yeah. We live in scary times, I'm telling you, and all of this could have been avoided if, back in November of 2016, people had, and that's your cue to say, passed the one
question quadrennial, the quadrennial one question IQ test.
There you go.
Yeah, but I don't. I've got to figure out a way to stop inflaming people and get us to look forward and not back, all Obama style. Not that it's on me or anything, but I mean, just, you know, what I personally do at this time here.
Yeah, but solutions have an interesting trait. Solutions are contingent upon definition of the problem.
Were you? Let me ask you a question, Scott. And I know you're trying to get out of here, but let me ask you a question. Were you ever a member of any of those young people's, like, secret societies? I hate to say secret societies because that makes it sense, but, you know, any of those character-building organizations?
Oh, like Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts?
Yeah, D-Malay, any of that stuff?
Oh, hell no.
Okay, well, I was. And I mention this because you just, in talking about 2016, when you're voting, because there's all kinds of democracy going on all over the place in the room. And so when you're voting on, you vote on everything, you know, are we gonna let Cletus go to the bathroom now? You know, all in favor? Yeah. No, I mean, Robert's Rules of Order, and you got to go through the you got to go through parliamentary procedure, and you got to have discussion, and then you limit discussion, and then you call the question, and you vote, and yada yada yada. But there was this one line that they always used: when you vote, do not vote upon your personal prejudices. Vote for the good of the order. And I heard it in my fraternity. I heard it in the stuff I was involved with as a kid. You know. But it's an important concept. Vote for the good of the order. Let's say somebody wants to join up, and you may not personally get along that well with the guy, but he may have talents that he would bring to the chapter that could really help. So you figure, I'm going to put my personal prejudices aside, and I'm going to vote for the greater good of the larger group. I'm going to vote for the good of the order. Well, that is precisely what did not happen, Scott, in 2016. And it may never happen again. Once upon a time, regardless of whichever side people lined up on, they lined up on that side because they thought that that side would be better for this country. No matter how right or wrong you may have thought them to be.
I remember those days.
You know, there were people who voted for Richard Pinhead Nixon in 1960 who thought that they were voting for the good of the country. They weren't voting for him because it made them feel better about themselves. They weren't voting for him because they thought he was going to give them a cookie. Lots of cookies tonight. They were voting for him, and the same applied to the Kennedy side. They were voting for him because they thought the country would be better off with that particular person in office. Well, in 2016, we saw a profusion of people who were, "I'm going to vote my conscience," which is another way of saying, I am going to vote my personal prejudices over the needs of the country. And if we're going to do anything in 2018, and God knows in 2020, then we've got to get back to voting for the good of the country. And, you know, Steve kind of from New York kind of alluded to this last Friday night. When he said, you know, everything was in the balance, and in the end, I'm voting so people can keep health care. I'm voting so that immigrants won't be tormented. I'm voting so that gay people and straight people alike have the same rights under the Constitution. And that's voting for the good of the country. Not as opposed to voting your personal prejudices, but you've got a bunch of Trumpansies out there, maggots, who are, I'm going to vote for him because he's going to make America white again. Or I'm going to vote for him because he's a millionaire, and someday I want to be a millionaire too.
I'm going to vote for him because I'm going to get, I mean, it happened here in West Virginia. I'm a voting for him because I'm going to get my coal job. In other words, voting on very, very granular personal reasons as opposed to voting for the good of the republic.
And by doing that, pardon me, it's not just a matter, as bad as it is, it's not just a matter of not behaving in a manner consistent with the good of the country. It's even more insidious than that. Underlying their red hats and their signs and their slogans is some unspoken notion that if we elect this guy, he's going to fix everything. He's got up to and including my very own life.
I alone can save it. I alone can fix it.
Exactly. And they're going to, they really have set themselves up to be sorely disappointed. Okay. So there's that part of it. And you can't tell them. It's something that has to bite them in their own ass on a one by one individual basis.
Well, and I was going to say, and then there was another subset who voted specifically to harm people's interests. There was a subset who said, well, you know, what we need, that stupid accent, and it wasn't those folks anyway. What we need is we need for Trump to get in, and he'll bring the apocaryph.
Yeah.
It'll be so horrible, the whole country will collapse, and then we can have a socialist wonderland. Which is, you know, just horribly delusional thinking, but was vicious in its implementation as well, because it contemplates, I'm going to hurt somebody's grandmother. I'm going to hurt a lot of grandmothers. I'm going to hurt a lot of grandpas. I'm going to hurt a lot of children. But for my political vision of what needs to happen in this country, I'm going to do that. In many ways, it's the political equivalent of lining people up against the wall and with the machine gun.
Yeah. And making them dig their ditch beforehand.
And it goes back, you know, during the economic collapse, the Great Recession, it goes back to the burn baby burn people. You know, fuck it. Let all the car companies die. Let the banks go down. Let this whole place go down in flames. And, you know, as it says somewhere in the New Testament, and they shall cry, Lord, Lord.
Yeah.
And those would be the first people hollering, Lord, Lord. And so it's a trend that I see. Maybe some would argue and say it's been there all along, but it seems to be, well, again, you know, from Reagan forward, you know, people who vote because he's going to make this a Christian nation. Well, you know, they're voting their personal Christianity over somebody else's right to believe or not believe. That's not voting for the good of the republic. The republic is healthy when the Baptists can be Baptists, and the Presbyterians can be Presbyterians, and the Muslims can be Muslims, and the Jews can be Jews, and the atheists can be atheists, and the Catholics can be Catholics and whatnot.
And the Hindus hate the Muslims, and everybody hates
you're
the
not.
Jews.
Yeah, but the thing is, since no government's favoring anything, then nobody feels like they're getting one up, and that cuts down on the aggrievement. But now you've got a segment of voters who vote specifically because they want to see their personal vision of theocracy foisted upon the whole country. Not just the people who want to believe that shit, but the whole country. Anyway, we're going to get out of here, Scott, because I've got about 32 minutes left in the program. But it's been a great conversation.
Very quickly, before I go, I commend this article to you from The Atlantic. The article entitled The Last Temptation. It touches upon some of the very things that you were speaking of, and I can't recommend it highly enough.
Sounds good. Well, thank you, Scott. Thank you kindly, and good night to Punky.
Okay, say good night, Punky. Punky, say goodnight. Nothing. Okay.
Contrary, confounded bird. Later, Scott.
See you next time.
It's our buddy Scott and Punky in the background, vaguely, from magnificent San Diego. 31 minutes left in the program and $60 left to go in fundraising to get the week started so we don't get in the hole already on Tuesday. I'm rooting for us. Hopefully we can do that. Thanks to Glenn and John and Charlene and Bob, and $60 to go on Bob's challenge. So don't leave Bob flapping in the wind, please. That's, you know. So here's a little something. I love it when someone does, it takes an issue and distills it to something that is absolutely comprehensible. I found this over at Huffington Post. I put it on my Facebook page. You'll only get the audio of it. The animation is delightful. Animator brilliantly explains the gun control debate using cats. Cats, because everybody loves cats. Cats are all over the internet. This makes perfect sense. It's by a guy named Alex. Well, I'm gendering, aren't I? It's by a person named Alex Clark, who has an animation studio. And this is by way of encouraging people to attend the March 24th rally for March for Our Lives, being led by students from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. I think with the audio alone, the concept will come through.
This awful cat.
Oh, wait a minute. Let's back up. There we go.
Before we start, we can all agree that banning cats won't get rid of all cats. And that a majority of people that do own cats are good people. Not every cat is an awful cat. And I happen to love a cute, cuddly cat. Ah, look at you. So cute. Such a cute little kitty.
Stupid, awful cat! Ah!
That was an awful cat. And that is what we're here to talk about. Let's say you're at the movies or church or school when out of nowhere, a cat pops up and claws you in the face. Suddenly, you might want to do something about this awful cat. Now, I live on a street that had one awful stray cat. And when no one did anything about it, one cat turned into dozens and they were all clawing people in the face. And it's all because my neighbor, the crazy cat lady, Mrs. Nra, was leaving out giant piles of treats for cats. So you explained to your neighbor that maybe it would be okay to have a couple rules for these cats. Now you would hope that a good neighbor would understand. But she freaks out and yells at you that you're trying to ban all cats. And you're just like, hey, I just don't want to get clawed in the face. I'm not banning anything. And they tell you maybe if you had your own cat, you'd feel better about it. And you say, I do have a cat. It's that cute cuddly one in my window. That's not the problem. The problem is these...
God damn it!
So as you can see, we have a cat problem. And all anyone wants is to put some rules in place to stop the excessive amount of awful cats on the street. But instead, I'm looking out my window and seeing even bigger, scarier lions, tigers, cheetahs, and AR-15s. That's not the same as a regular cat. But my crazy cat lady neighbor wants you to think it's okay for everybody to own a cheetah.
What?
No. Would you stop it, Mrs. Nra? Really? And sure, there are people out there with the proper knowledge and training to understand the responsibilities of owning a cheetah, but when the cheetahs keep ending up in schools clawing kids in the face, I don't think the answer is to put more cheetahs in the school. And I don't think the best way to buy a cheetah is to walk into Petco and go, hey, I want a cheetah. Oh, okay, here you go. And I think we all can agree that it's impossible to get rid of all cats. Which is good, because there's tons of cute, cuddly ones. But let's make some rules that limit and prevent how many awful cats wind up on our street. Less awful cats means less people clawed in the face. Sure, they still might get attacked by a dog or abducted by aliens, but let's handle this one problem at a time. And while this won't solve all cat problems, there's a good chance it'll help with a lot. Like, they had a similar cat problem over on Australia Street, and after they put rules in place, good people still owned good cats, but no one has gotten clawed in the face in over 20 years. And to all the teenagers on my street that are fed up with that cat lady, I'm really proud of you for being so brave. So I hope that explains to you the problem we're having with guns. Now, I have a feeling that the comments on this video are gonna get a little out of hand. If you see that, could you help me out? Direct the conversation back to what laws can we put in place to get less guns in the hands of wrong people. It's important and something we should talk about constructively. How can we stop Mrs. Nra? She's a good lady, she's just a little too into her cats. Maybe we could get her to be interested in a new American pastime, like give everyone on the street free apple pie. There's a rally on March 24th in Washington, D.C., and I would love it if you could attend. I'll have all that information down below. That said, we'll be back to the regularly scheduled videos starting soon. Congrats to the hello person for finding this week's screenshot. If you find it and tweet it to me first, we'll feature it at the end of the video. It's Alex Clark.
I am
having a lot of fun on Instagram lately, so come hang out over there. Otherwise, I will see you somewhere, okay? Bye!
Yeah, that needs to get viral, if it isn't already. Guns Explained with Cats. Again, over at Huffington Post by Andy McDonald. Animator brilliantly explains the gun control debate using cats. And I was chuckling along merrily, enjoying myself. It was all just so, it was good fun. Until he got to the person who was the problem there in the neighborhood, Mrs. Nra. Mrs. Nra's name is spelled N-R-A. First thing came to my mind was, what makes me think her first name is Dana, and she drinks too much? Yeah, well. But that's when I started giggling mirthfully and realized that that had to be shared. Big kudos to the creator of that. And like I said, Go and view it, because it's even more fun when you get to see the animation that goes with it. But somehow or another, that was simple enough that a maggot could probably even understand it. AR-15 assault cheetahs. Meanwhile, going back to the whole Mike Pence thing, Texas T says, Pence was speaking for all America when he went after Joy Behar? What the... He's the vice president of atheists, is he not? He was way out of bounds. Disney should have responded to their customers and not to fucking Renfield. Because that's what Mike Pencil Neck Geek is. He's Renfield to Trump's Dracula. He's just a little bug-eating creature. Yep. Renfield. Thanks, Texas T. Thanks a bunch. Let's run over. Jim's sitting on hold and checking with Jim. Hey, Jim.
Wow.
Yeah, wasn't that great?
Yeah, it was okay.
You need to look it up and see because like I said, the animation is precious.
Yeah, that's the reason why Mr. Nye keeps his kitty cat well vaccinated, well cared for, and indoors, and doesn't allow anything to happen with the proliferation of feral cats as referenced.
I have two feral
weapons of destruction.
I have two very confused cats right now because they want to know where their mother is.
Well, I'm
and
sure
they're walking around the house, repeating their one word vocabulary. Mom, mom, mom.
Well,
mom.
I had one that felt that way for almost a year, so I know exactly how he must have felt.
Yeah, I'm just the guy who brings in the cat food and puts the water in the dish.
No, that's when I was gone in the hospital.
Yeah, I know.
God, it's horrible. And what they were telling me, but I guess you've got Buffy Ward and Mr. Scott is in his tidy whities. I'm gonna get that boy a bathroom because he may have a lascivious neighbor. I mean, you just never can tell.
Well, you know, a Gamora like San Diego, right?
Well, there you go. That's what I've heard. I've been there. I've seen some of that. But, that's the old song, how does it go? Don't know why, ain't no sun up in the sky, stormy weather, just can't get my fool heart together. Now, you know that other stormy song that came, I don't know where it came from, but the first one that I mentioned was a damn good dance song by Viola Wills back in the 80s. And I think it's based on the one in the 30s. But do you really think that this thing is really going to have any impacts on Donald Trump with this lawyer in California?
It could. I mean, just because he's president, he does not get to ignore legal process.
Well,
as long as it remains in the court system and is not dismissed, either with or without prejudice, it has to be addressed.
Excuse me. I think it will probably be addressed after he leaves office.
Well, but the thing is, thanks to what happened in the great Clinton penis chase, that might have been the case once upon a time. It is no longer the case. In fact, the lawyer who drove that bus to make Clinton respond to the litigation, the civil litigation, was none other than the husband of Kellyanne Conway. And so we have a legal precedent now that says presidents are not unduly burdened by responding to civil suits.
Well, that's a possibility. Anything's possible. One can always hope and just see what happens.
But the most enjoyable part of this is that is the little box that that her lawyer has constructed for Trump. And he kind of has to get in it one way or the other.
Well, yeah.
Oh, but I really want the $130,000. He's going to give it directly to me. I really want it. You can't have it, sir. That'll be admitting it. I don't care. I want to be president for life.
Well, you know, a box has four corners. You never can tell. As I say, one can always hope. And that is for sure. Other than that, I have not been really in the news cycle today, though I did hear the View the other day with Joy Behar said that, and I said, oh boy, here we go again. Now, you know, there is this tremendous movement to keep them off the air or to keep them out of the public view as much as possible.
Well, they haven't succeeded so far, and I mean, she's...
I know, but those girls, they have not been without significant effect on a lot of things in media, because the minute they come on the air, I know radio stations and internet streaming stations in San Francisco that go straight to them. And every word they say is but like verbatim, or what they said is repeated shortly thereafter. I think it's an interesting show. I like Joy Behar personally. I think she's quite fine in what she does, and you know that's her right to say what she wants to say. But I'm sure that you can see steam coming out of each ear of Mike Pence's head when she said that.
And well, what got you know what really pushed it over the top? If she had stopped and said, "Isn't that what we call mental illness?" It was the fact that then she went on and made a joke at his expense. My question is can he talk to Mary Magdalene without his wife in the room? That's what pushed it over.
I know that was it, and I thought to myself, "Girlfriend, you have really opened your mouth and said a mouthful." I mean, normally I listen to those conversations with just listening. And when that one popped open, I said, oh my, here we are. Here we are. So I'm sure that, can you imagine the movements that are being undertaken right now to get her off that program?
Because
those ladies sort of come and go with their positions in the network. But
Joy Behar's been there forever.
Well, she had her own show for a long time, and I enjoyed it. And then she just disappeared. I don't know what happened to her. Excuse me.
Well, I don't know either, but I presume it's because she went over to The View.
No, she just disappeared. It was like she went behind the boom. I don't know what happened. Of course, you know, with your history of public media, I'm sure you can understand how people come and people go. And they return, depending on who's in charge, what, or whatever.
Yeah. So, did you get buried in snow over there, Jim?
Pretty much.
Did the ancient antiquated coal-fried power grid hold up for you? This one blinked and went down 2 or 3 times.
Well, I understand there were a lot of motor problems, wrecks, stuff like that, you know. Explosive chatter of the wrong kind. If people only knew how to drive. Of course, that's the way it is around here for 12 months out of the year.
Well, I was going to say, people don't know how. Beckley, what? You know, that's any day that ends in Y, Jim.
Yeah, it is indeed. Not exactly proud to say that that's where I live, but what can I say? There are worse places and there are better places. And there it is. Did you ever get over to your grocer's to get your sausage?
No, we spent, because my daughter is ill, I didn't get to do that this weekend. It's still on the list, so.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Well, she needs to get better. She really, really does. It's kind of frightening. I called them and they said, "Yeah, we keep it in stock. It's always here." So,
yeah.
You know, isn't it amazing though? I mean, so that grocery store is probably 50 feet from being inside West Virginia, but we can't get it. We cannot get Kaneka sausage into West Virginia. Not for love. Not for money.
Oh well, who knows.
But I mapped it out. It's 62 miles from my driveway to their parking space, and back. So that's a, you know. So I need to go down there and make the trip worth it, which means, you know, buying 10 packages or so.
Well, maybe those Titanic plates might shift, and they might end up on the other side.
You know, they might end up here on the other side of the New River. Absolutely.
There you go.
And I went out driving around today, and I want to tell you, this was one of the prettiest snows I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
Just dead silent, and the roads were nice and clear by the time I went out, but the snow was just all over the branches, and the river was gorgeous. And
it was just locked.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You're right. Enjoy your program Friday night. I'm sorry I didn't get a mention about Roxy Music since y'all were so into it.
Well, I just found it very interesting to see Brian Ferry on that program. You've got Netflix, right?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, you've got to watch that. And I mean, you talk about a great detective yarn. Oh, my goodness. It was good.
I'll have to. His voice is kind of shot right now. It's not what it used to be at all.
No.
Unfortunately.
But it still worked.
It hasn't held up.
The soundtracks, the music is beautiful, the jazz age stuff, and then the set decorator was a genius. So was the props master. So was the set designer. Apparently, at wherever it was they shot it, they built a little mini Berlin on a back lot.
Well, that's no undertaking.
And
it's a small undertaking.
And I mean, they spent a lot of money on this, and you can tell the acting is a very, very high quality. But again, the storyline is just freaking awesome.
Yeah, give me the name of this again. I'm sorry. I'm sort of behind things like
it's
this.
It's called Babylon Berlin.
Babylon Berlin, okay.
15 episodes so far. I don't know if they're going to be back, but apparently they're trying to.
They're running one story right now on the cable called A Load in Berlin. Have you seen that?
Uh-uh.
It's about this couple who lose their son in Poland, who was in the Wehrmacht, and what they do, they go around, and the husband makes these cards, and they're almost like, it's the writing's like calligraphy, and they're all against Adolf Hitler, and leaves them all over different spots of Berlin, and it just drives the Berlin police and the SS crazy. It's a basic true story, trying to find this guy. And of course, eventually they did find him. And of course, he wound up under the guillotine. But it's an interesting story. It really is. The story of the life that he and his wife had and how they would deal with their neighbors and stuff like that. Back then, neighborhoods were run pretty tightly, and there's a lot of sympathy that you can have for these people who lived back then and who tried to resist in their own small way. It really is.
Well, when you get a chance, I mean, maybe just start watching this evening. It'll grab you and it'll pull you right along. The character's well drawn enough that. You know, you invest in the story, which is, of course, the heart and soul of any good production.
Very good. Well, anyway, I just like I say, when you were talking about rock music the other night, I started thinking an awful lot about that original band, and you know, they really each one went out on his own to do a lot of different things.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
And, I mean. Among whom was one who I actually talked to one night. The night I went to Studio 54. And that was Brian Eno. He was there.
Wow.
And we just tangentially talked about, well, how much would that be too starstruck? How much I liked what he did in his outrageous costumes. But also, he passed all that and was going into ambient music. Like Music for Airports.
I've still got my copy of Music for Airports. It was for years and years and years. That was my meditating music.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely, yeah. And so it was a degree of handsome nostalgia that I sort of visited along. And I remember you told me that Avalon was music at your wedding or something like that.
Yeah,
or,
yeah.
Or I thought, got your emails on that effect. So I'm sure that brought back some memories too, yes.
Oh, absolutely. Agnes and I were sitting there watching it together.
Well, very good.
All right. Well, Jim, you have yourself a good evening and stay warm and cross your fingers and the power will stay on.
Well, yeah, that's definitely a wish.
It's really all you can absolutely. Do, you know, with this bunch, you know.
Well, like I say, keep Buffy covered up.
Hear, hear. Jim, take care.
Hi.
Bye now. It's our buddy Jim. Sounds like Jim might be coming down with a cold. It's a good excuse for a little NyQuil, a little homemade NyQuil cocktail. About 7 minutes left in the program. Again, we are $60 from finishing off Bob in Texas's challenge. Please don't let that just lay there, please. Matching offers and challenges are really, really valuable in this. But you know that. So, I don't know. Did you see the story? Turns out, down in Florida, in Citrus County, they had themselves a bona fide, no kidding, neo-Nazi teacher. And she wasn't just, and she was proud of it. Middle school teacher, you know, young minds when they're easily influenced. 25-year-old social studies teacher at Crystal River Middle School. I don't know why I wanted to say Crystal Meth Middle School. Crystal River Middle School in Citrus County, Florida, was the host of a, and you know, I just hate this term, white nationalist. You know, a neo-Nazi podcast called Unapologetic. She operated under a nom de guerre, if you will, a pseudonym. She called herself Tiana Dalichov. And on her little neo-Nazi podcast, she bragged about the fact that she worked in neo-Nazi propaganda into her lesson, into her lessons for the little middle schoolers she taught. Back on February 26th, she uploaded a podcast, and she had a guest on who was shrieking about diversity in schools. The quote, "A kid from Nigeria and a kid who came from Sweden are supposed to learn exactly the same and have the same IQ." This teacher, whose real name is Diana Volich, agreed with the racist and said that science, by which she probably means Charles Murray, has proven that some races, of course we understand there's no such thing as a race, are smarter than others. Then she went on to brag about the fact that she'd brought it into the classroom and that she was hiding her views from school administrators, and that when parents complained about how she's injecting political bias into the classroom, she went to the principal and said it wasn't true. On the podcast, she said she believed me and backed off. Then she went on to say, yes, racists and white supremacists need to infiltrate the schools and become teachers. They don't have to be vocal about their views, but get in there, be more covert, and just talk. Start taking over those places. She responded to her guest saying, right, I'm absolutely one of them. So then Huffington Post began digging into just exactly who she was, and they eventually identified her as this Diana Volich, horrible human being. Among other things, she said that Muslims need to be eradicated from the earth. She has argued in favor of weird-ass, bizarre, twisted, anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. Yeah, you know, just your garden variety American maggot Nazi. We don't have to guess about who she votes for, do we? No. Among other things, she has tweeted, it isn't supremacist or hateful to prefer your own people over others. My own people are human beings. Because that's the only people there are on this earth. You know, America's education system is designed to enable victimization when teachers are forced to learn about institutional racism and prove it's real when it isn't. I literally feel brain cells dying as I read this bullshit. White privilege? Prove to me that it exists. Show me statistics that prove whites benefit economically solely because of their race. Of course, no one ever argues that white privilege means that white people benefit solely because of their white skin. Meanwhile, she works in an overwhelmingly white school. 90% of the students there are white, 4% black, 3% Hispanic. And the vast majority of the school students get free or reduced price lunch. Well, Huffington Post made the Citrus County School Board aware of what they had in their midst, and they investigated. And as of a week ago Sunday, she was removed from her classroom duties. Pursuant to Florida statute, an open investigation and materials related to it are exempt from public record and cannot be discussed until the investigation is complete. Meanwhile, she introduced a statement saying, I'm not a white nationalist. She did this through her lawyer, of course. None of the statements released about my being a white nationalist or white supremacist have any truth to them, nor are my political beliefs injected into my teaching or social studies curriculum. While operating under the Russian pseudonym Tiana Dolachov on social media and the Unapologetic podcast, I employed political satire and exaggeration, mainly to the end of attracting listeners and followers and generating conversation about the content discussed between myself and guests. In other words, she tried to deploy the Limbaugh defense. My friends, I'm just an entertainer. When I tell an African-American to call me back after he takes the bone out of his nose, that's comedy, my friends, comedy. So she admits that she is who she says she is, and from there it's just a matter of listening to what she does, and it ain't satire. It's satire the way a cross-burning is satire. So here we are at the end of the program. More in Monday is in the can. Back for Titanic Tuesday tomorrow. Thanks, everybody, for joining in and participating in whatever fashion you so do. Thank you to everybody who keeps the program going. Thank you. Remember, if you want to become a subscriber, a $10 a month subscription will set you back about 16 cents per hour of programming. Not a lot. And thanks, of course, to our all-volunteer staff. I have no idea what happened to the chat room link at headonradionetwork.com, but thanks to Sparky for setting me straight over here. You can get in from headon.live. Thanks to Sparky and Steve from Georgistan for moderating in the chat room this evening. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Thanks, Ben Birch, whiteRoseSociety.org. And Brother Deacon Asa asks, what is it with all the neo-Nazis with Slavic last names all of a sudden? Well, that's kind of where a lot of the, it's where a lot of neo-Nazi racism is sort of flourishing. Sorry, just, you know, is. Anyway, we're out of here. Always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.